try to take bias out.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who wins a national championship in football first, Oklahoma or Texas, you think? Because I think you could make an argument for either one, truly.
Mm-hmm. I think you could, too. I think you could, too.
Even this year.
Boy, that's tough. That is really, really good.
No, it's a pleasure. Dari Noka, ESPN, SEC Network. First time meeting you. Sent me on a wild goose chase, but it was worth it, man, to get in here.
I don't know, man. I don't know why I thought I was at one hotel and then you're texting me, hey, I'm here, and I'm like, I don't. Then you said you're at 4th Street, and I'm looking around. I go, I'm like, that's 7th and that's 8th. We got a problem because I'm nowhere near it. Thanks for coming to get me, man. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Well, VIP treatment for a VIP, so we really appreciate you taking the time. And I'm sure most of the people that know about you know that you're from Oklahoma, right? And you're an Oklahoma grad from Tulsa.
Yep.
Can you kind of share just, you know, your growing up and love for Oklahoma football and or all the sports in general?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I grew up like most of us in this business, just kind of, you know, I didn't really watch cartoons. I watched sports. I watched reruns of old games and you know, old school Sports Center. And that's pretty much it. I mean, as a kid, I wasn't much of an athlete, you know, small and still small. And I loved every sport, though. Loved every, you know, we would play pickup basketball and football in random yards. And I played baseball through high school, but not like for my high school team, more of a rec league team. And but I loved it. I loved the competitiveness of it. I loved just kind of seeing how seasons developed, right? Start to finish, whether it was our own season or it was Oklahoma's season. I liked the storylines within the seasons, kind of getting to know more and more about players and coaches, and really just had this fascination with sports from the jump. My dad is from Iran. He came over. He liked soccer, but he quickly adjusted to, when he got to the United States, became a big fan of football. So we would watch football. We'd go to Oklahoma games. He was a University of Tulsa grad. I would grow up going to Tulsa games. If we weren't in Norman, we were at TU. And so really, I mean, it's, you know, family kind of went, mother went to Oklahoma State. Family kind of went all over the place. But OU at that time in the mid-80s when I was really like, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old was really good. Really good at football. And I went to a couple of games with my grandparents and I was hooked at that point.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say Oklahoma fits the SEC like a glove, don't you think?
It feels it. It feels that way. I've always thought that. It was funny. Years ago, I would have a conversation with Greg Sankey. I would see him random places. We'd always spend a little time together in Omaha and still do at the finals of the World Series. And I would always say, if you're ever looking to expand, you know, there's a place that fits like what you said, fits like a glove culturally. In terms of investment, importance of athletics, in terms of geography, it even make, you know, it makes sense. And I was always just kind of joking with him, but he likes to tell me a story. Years ago, we occasionally in Omaha, we'll go for a run together in the morning, and he had to cut it short one day. And he's like, I got a meeting. I forgot I had this meeting that came up, and didn't tell me anything about it, but years later told me that meeting was a big call with OU in Texas, essentially basically inviting him into the league. And it seems to have fit well. It seems to have fit well. It's kind of perfect, honestly, I think.
Yeah. So I took my dad and first time we went out there, July 1st, when they became official into the conference, and we enjoyed it. He especially enjoyed it so much that so he's a big Tennessee grad. And they were posting Tennessee that year. He said, we got to go back. So we went to Norman twice.
Nice.
In the first couple months that they were officially in the SEC. And the only thing I told him was, and everybody was nice to us. They just
good,
great
good
people. But I said, you know, there's not a lot of rednecks here. That was the only difference.
There's not a lot of rednecks in Oklahoma. Good.
Compared to the rest of the yes. And hey, I love, thank you for watching the show. I mean, a lot of rednecks, you know, I'm a little bit of a redneck. You know what I mean? So, but that was the only difference I could see. Not a lot of rednecks.
You just might not have been in the right areas. Okay. It's The redneck quotient, I think, actually does kind of fit with the SEC as well. So you may not, you know, you're in that OKC metro there when you're in Norman, and so you got a lot more city than you do country, but you don't have to go that far. But that I remember that day because we were there doing SEC network programming. God, it was hot that day.
Yeah.
Remember, it's like 102 degrees, July 1st, 2024. Oh, man. But it was a great day. It was a celebration, you know.
Yeah, it was so hot. Shout out. Man, I always forget the guy's name. I'm truly sorry for not knowing his name. But, you know, there's a bar over there that they serve the Sooner Swirl.
Oh, yeah. The Mont.
The Mont.
Yeah.
Thank you. So we were there, and we were the owner and my dad kind of hit it off.
Patrick? Might be Patrick.
Bald guy with a beard, I think, but
yeah,
super nice guy.
Yeah, I think it's Patrick, yeah.
We told him, I said, hey, I got to be on Feinbaum here in a little bit. You know, can you direct us where that is? And you said, like you said, it was brutally hot. Mm-hmm. And my dad's there. He said, he literally stopped working and said, I'll give you guys a ride in my truck. So he gave us a ride right to, I mean, that's Oklahoma right there.
Love it.
All the people could not be nicer to my dad and I. So ever since then, I'm like, I feel like I'm a Tennessee grad, but if I have a secondary SEC school, it's Oklahoma.
Nice.
You know?
that's awesome to hear. I always enjoy it when people because enough people know that I'm from Oklahoma, will say, oh, and you're getting that a lot these last couple of years, made our first trip to Norman. Oh, it was so much better than I expected. It's a great, great scene. Everybody treated us well. Or when, you know, they'll go to a home game and OU fans will travel there. And they'll be like, oh, all the fans of your school were so nice. And that's what you want to hear. You don't want to hear that they were jerks or that they treated people badly or that people had a miserable time in Norman because of no hospitality, you know?
Right.
So I'm glad to hear that.
Hey, so you mentioned that little meeting that Commissioner Sankey had.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just kind of curious, how did you first hear about Oklahoma coming to the SEC? Because for most of us, it was at SEC Media Days.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of us, even I remember, I can't recall who it was on SEC Network, but I think it was even one of the commentators was like, that can't be real. Like it was almost too hard to believe that the SEC was adding Texas and Oklahoma.
I don't remember the first time I heard it possibly mentioned, but I remember the day that it became official. Well, that it became, yes, it's going to happen. It's funny. My wife was pregnant. We were going to a doctor's appointment and COVID was still a thing. So I couldn't go into the appointment. So I'm sitting in the car listening to the radio and I hear it. And then she comes out from the appointment, gets back in the car. Now, my wife does not care about sports. Like, she has zero desire to talk sports, no interest in sports whatsoever. But she gets in the car and she picks up on this conversation that they're having about Oklahoma joining the SEC, knowing that I'm with the SEC network. And she said, okay, so this is kind of cool for you, right? And I'm like, this is amazing. It's like a professional and personal dream come true, right? My alma mater is coming into this league that I've covered for 15 years. And I love the league. I mean, I didn't when I was growing up. I was certainly anti-SEC, like everybody that is outside the SEC. But once I started spending so much time in it, years and years of calling basketball games and baseball games and being in studio, seeing what athletics means to these fans, then I was like, this is a beautiful thing. And it was funny because we had about a 20-minute conversation. I mean, we went and we stopped at a taco place we like and wouldn't go in the restaurant because of COVID and all that. But, you know, went in, picked up food. We sat in the car listening to sports radio talking about OU joining the SEC for half an hour. To this day, the longest sports conversation I've ever had with my wife.
It was just that big of a deal, huh?
It was that big of a deal. Even she recognized it was that big of a deal.
Mm.
Yeah. It was awesome. Still is.
So, yeah, so also maybe go back a little bit here, mm-hmm. getting to the SEC network, you know, how did you get on that path? Because, I mean, that's like the dream job right there.
Well, so, you know, growing up, when I realized that this is what I wanted to do, I mean, my dream job was always like most people that start out in sportscast. I want to do sports center.
Yep.
I want to do sports center. So I got out of OU and kind of took the path most traveled. You know, you start small market and you kind of work your way up. And I spent almost 2 years in a little town in Northwest Montana called Kalispell, Montana. KCFW was the TV station. up by the Canadian border, Whitefish resort town. Amazing time, an amazing time. I covered four high schools. That's pretty much what I covered. From there, went to Lincoln, Nebraska for 2 years, covered the Huskers. Really, the last time they were really good at football. 2000, 2001 season. So I covered Eric Crouch, won the Heisman, and they went to the Rose Bowl, played Miami in the championship game. And then after that, I got a job at my hometown at Tulsa at a CBS affiliate there, which was kind of cool working at a station that I grew up watching as a kid, you know, and John Anderson worked there and Bob Stevens and Mark Schwartz and a lot of names from ESPN had worked in that station at one point or another. And then from there, I got to ESPN. So in 2004, I went up there. I did about a year of ESPN News in Connecticut and then kind of transitioned and did a lot of SportsCenter for about 6 years. Kind of living that dream, right, that I always wanted, and a lot of Baseball Tonight's, and I've always loved that show, and College Football Live, when it started, it was kind of Reese Davis and myself were the main two that hosted that show, and got to a point up there where I just kind of wanted to have something that was like mine, and that wasn't it. We call that Gen Pop up there, right, and a lot of people that can do a lot of shows. It's like general population, so... And this story, I don't even know that my OU people really know this because I've never told them this, but we were starting the Longhorn Network as a company. And I like Austin, don't get me wrong. You know, I appreciate great athletic programs. And so I went into the woman's office who was kind of heading that up, and I was like, expressed an interest in doing Longhorn. Now, she's a Texas grad. And, you know, she's like, you want to... And I'm like, sure. Yeah, you know, it could be something that, like, I can wrap my arms around this. Like, it can be mine. And I kind of wanted something like that.
Oh, man.
Well, so it actually looked pretty good, like it was going to happen, okay? And then I went in her office and met with her again a few weeks down the road. And she said, turns out enough people at Texas know where you went to school and they're afraid that would rub viewers the wrong way, which it probably would have. And I think that was fair. So even a better opportunity came about. The guy, Lowell Galindo, who was at ESPNU, which was in Charlotte, is a huge Texas guy. Huge. So it worked out that he ended up going to Austin, becoming the face of Longhorn. And I ended up going to Charlotte and taking over kind of the face of ESPNU. And then 3 years later, we started the SEC Network. I had a great relationship with the SEC because of the time that I was doing the ESPNU stuff, I was calling a lot of SEC sports. So I was going campus to campus and kind of getting to know people. I had a great relationship with Mike Slive, the commissioner at the time. And the SEC and ESPN both wanted me to kind of be the lead guy at the SEC Network. So since day one, August 14 of 14, that's been what I've been doing.
Yeah. No,
it's a long path, but, and a long story, but it is. It's like a dream job now that I never knew was going to be a dream job of mine. Like, the dream was always a sports center for me, and I loved doing it, and I'll never, ever take for granted that I did it for a while. But to live in Charlotte, to be around these fan bases, you know, it has been amazing.
Yeah, and so you've been able to cover so many great games, and I read a post you wrote about covering the Rose Bowl.
Oh, man.
Being on the sideline for Georgia, Oklahoma,
yeah.
Is that, where does that rank? I know it didn't go the way you probably wanted, but where does that rank among all-time games that you've witnessed?
That I have covered in person, it's the best one. Yeah. That game was incredible. That game, all of it was fantastic. The whole few days was unreal. I was up there, out there in L.A. with Matt Stinchcomb, a great Georgia Bulldog, obviously. Chris Doering, who you would have thought was a Georgia Bulldog as opposed to a Florida Gator. I mean, just like my Sooner fans might be disappointed to hear that I considered doing Longhorn Network. Career move, by the way. That, you know, life in Austin wouldn't be that bad. But if his Gator fans knew how hard he was rooting for Georgia, because OU wasn't in the league at that point, right?
Right,
he's
right.
All SEC stuff. And it was funny that OU scored the first touchdown that day, and it was Baker to Hollywood Brown. And it's in the end zone, and I'm standing next to Greg Sankey in that end zone. Not in the, like on the sideline, but about 5 yards deep into the end zone. Not far from where Hollywood caught the touchdown pass. And Sankey knows, you know, I'm an OU guy. And he kind of looked at me. He goes, you better not, you know, like didn't say it, but he goes, you better not be cheering out loud. And I kind of look at him, and I'm like, you know, it was fun. But, you know, yeah, I would have wanted Oklahoma to win the game, and I did, certainly, but... being there for that game, to this day, I think it's still maybe, it's certainly one of the greatest playoff games of all time. And that setting and that scene at the Rose Bowl, it was pretty awesome. That's probably still the best one I've been to in person. Texas, Arizona State in the Peach Bowl a couple years back was pretty awesome too. Scataboo brought Arizona State back, and then Quinn Ewers and Texas held on and won in overtime. That was a pretty good one that we were at too. But
what about
that Rose Bowl was amazing.
I could be wrong, but I believe I read somewhere, were you also at the Bama-Georgia National Championship, Tua?
I was not there.
No?
Nope. Mm-hmm. I was watching that at home. Okay. Yeah, I was not there. I was there leading up, doing some coverage leading up to it, but the game itself, I was at home.
Yeah.
Second and 26.
That Rose Bowl, though, that probably is the best playoff game ever.
I mean, I would think so, given the number, the incredible amount of scoring. I mean, OU couldn't stop anybody that day. I mean, it was, you know, Georgia ran for like 13, 14 yards a carry. Chubb and Michelle had their way, did whatever they wanted. OU had a 10-point lead in the second half, let it get away. I mean, we still talk, you know, and the Sooner family still remembers the squib kick Lincoln decided to attempt, you know, at the end of the first half that led to a long Rodrigo Blankenship field goal. You could kind of sense momentum starting to shift their way going into halftime. And but no, man, that day, that setting, an incredible flyover. I'll never forget that. And it was incredible. In fact, so after the game, we're sitting here doing SEC Network coverage. We had to wait on Georgia to come out to do a couple of interviews, and it must have been 45 minutes we're out there waiting, and eventually Kirby and Roquan Smith came out and did about a good 10-minute interview with us. And that from that point on, it was get our butts to LAX and try to get on the red eye to get home. But what a day, man. What a day it was.
And then I believe 14 years you did Dari and Mel Kiper radio.
Mm-hmm.
Got any fun stories of Mel Kiper? I could imagine. He seems like he's quite the character.
He's a trip. Mel is one of a kind. You know, it's funny because we did that show for 14 years, but in the magic of radio, we never did it in the same studio, right? He always did it out of his house in Baltimore, in Maryland, off on the coast of Maryland, and I always did it usually from a little studio we had set up here in Charlotte. And the first year, I was still in Bristol and when we started that in 11. But it was the best few hours of any given week, because even though I couldn't see him, we'd get on the air an hour early, we'd start going over the show, giving each other crap. I mean, he's hysterical. You know, he's got so many interests outside of sports, but he's got a very deep sports interest. He could be an NBA analyst if he wanted. He could be a Major League Baseball analyst if he wanted. He follows them so closely. He sleeps just a couple of hours a night. He stays up watching West Coast baseball games and then goes to bed and wakes up really early. He'll stay up and watch the local, you know, Clippers basketball broadcasts and go to bed late and wake up early. He doesn't need much sleep. He's got a ton of energy. The pumpkin pie for breakfast thing, you know, that became a thing, but it's not a true pumpkin pie. It's just like the pumpkin pie stuff out of the can because he can't eat the crust because it has too much hydrogenated fats in it. Doesn't use an ATM card. Has never written a check in his life. His wife basically hands him the money. Hates leaving home. I mean, there's a lot of Mel to Mel Kiper. There's a lot to Mel Kiper, but he's one of the nicest, like kindest human beings on the planet. He's just, my wife's never met him. She'll talk to him on the phone sometimes. We'll have a phone call and I'll put it on speaker and she'll talk to him. And on the phone, he sounds exactly the same as on the air. I mean, like, literally, if I'm on the phone with him, I mean, I'm usually, like, holding the phone out here because he's so loud. You know, like.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think we all know someone like that.
Yeah. Yeah, he's amazing, though. He's so nice.
That's great to hear. But I really wanted to ask you, too, on Saturdays, what that's like being in the command center there. I visited the studio, you know. I guess I shouldn't be surprised because I've been to a couple, but they're always a little bit smaller than I imagined. But just being locked in, like what is a? I know every Saturday is different because you never know what you're going to get on the field. But for you, what is a Saturday like
in football season
at SEC Network?
Yeah, so typical Saturday, you know, Ben Watson and Chris Doran get there. They start at the very beginning of the day. Peter Burns usually hosts the early portion of the day. And then he'll kind of take it until the kickoff of the second game on our network, which is 3:45 or 4, you know, in that range. At that point, he'll go home. I'll come in and kind of take over. We're just sitting on the set watching games. You know, we got 8 televisions in front of us. We got SEC games, all the big games on a national level. For years before they were in the league, we always had a dedicated OU TV. You know, they were always on one of those TVs for me. And we'll do halftime of a game, and then we'll sit and watch games. And then we'll do any in-between game fill to get to the primetime game, and then we'll just sit and watch games. And at the end of the night, we'll do an hour show, and usually at the end of Saturday, we'll go and not all the time, but a lot of times. It's been a long day, especially for those guys. You know, can't get B-Dub to go with us, but CD always wants to go grab a beer. We'll just go have one drink, kind of recap the day and wrap it up, get home late in the night and try to recover on Sunday. I mean, that's pretty much it. But I mean, it's an unbelievable Saturdays in the fall. It doesn't get better than that. It's just, we've got every game on that we could possibly watch. And if you can imagine trying to watch 8 games at once, I mean, it's, you know, the 3 of us are sitting in there and we're all reacting because we're not on the air the whole time. We're just kind of sitting in there watching games. And, you know, something will happen on one TV and one of us will see it and be like, oh! And then everybody else is like, where? You know, they're watching a different game and they can't, middle left, you know? Saturdays in the fall, it's a great time to be alive in that studio. That's fun.
I know it's work because, you know, for me in the falls, it's like,
I get paid. I don't know if it's work.
That's what I was going to say. Do you ever sit around and be like, I get paid to do this?
Oh, all the time.
Yeah.
All the time, man. Yeah. I mean, when we're done, I'll head over to the arena to watch the SEC tournament and sit there and say the same thing. Like, I'm literally sitting on a perch in the corner. I've got the best view of the court. And then afterwards, we'll talk to winning coaches and stuff. And I can't believe I get paid to do this. This is ridiculous, honestly. Like, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I mean, I always like say, you know, it's not digging ditches. And then I'm like, well, that's rude to those that dig ditches. And thank you for digging ditches. Which camera I'm looking at, but thank you all for digging. We need the ditches dug, you know? Yeah. But I'm just glad it's not me doing it. You know, I feel fortunate for sure.
You know, anytime I hear someone say digging ditches, my mom, her mother, so my grandma used to always be like, you know, do your schoolwork, otherwise you're gonna be digging ditches.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then we needed a ditch dug, and it was like $1,000. My mom was so mad, like, damn, I should have been a ditch.
I know. You say that and then you need it, right? You're like, you need it. You really need it. It's funny. Like, I'm probably giving too much information, but my son, he's 20, and Nick is like, you know, and by the way, yes, I'm referencing a 20-year-old son and then, you know, my wife being pregnant during COVID. We had a late baby. So I always say, yeah, we got 4 kids aged 20 to 4. And then I always feel like I have to say it's all with the same woman. And it's not a second marriage or anything. But he's 20 and kind of trying to figure out life. And he's talking about now at this point, he's even talking about being an electrician, you know, like college ain't for everybody. Right. And I've been pushing. I'm like, dude, trade, man. Like, we need electricians. We need plumbers. We need, like, you know. And he goes, really? Like, you think I could do that? I'm like, I think you could learn to do it, and it pays well. And by the way, you know how much money you're going to save yourself in the long run by being able to do your own electrical work instead of having to hire somebody out every single time you need something done? That ain't a bad way to go.
Not at all.
Go do it. And you know how much money you're going to save me so I can call you over to do my electrical work?
Hey, okay, I apologize. So I read my notes wrong here. Were you at the 2012 Bama LSU championship?
I was. That was
the one I was thinking. So,
yeah.
Again, I think because of the outcome, 21-0, you know, that's just a completely, you know, not a memorable game.
Yeah.
But the lead up to that must have been awesome. Insane, right?
That was a really fun game. That was the first national championship game I'd ever gotten to go to. And we were there for ESPNU. And I also had some additional responsibilities there at that game. In fact, at halftime, I had to do the Dr. Pepper. No, it was a kick. It was a kick for cash or something at halftime. And so I'm, you know, in the Superdome and and leading that thing. And it, that was one of those things they kind of abandoned the kick for cash. They realized not everybody can go kick a 40-yard field. It's like a 55-year-old dude that has ball's not even going to get off the ground, right? And then remember ESPN 3D? You remember it was a very short-lived thing, but they had a 3D broadcast of everything. Okay. So they had a 3D broadcast of that game, and I was the sideline host for that. It was me and Chip Kelly. So Chip was and I were doing that sidelines for that. But yes, the build-up was awesome. It was the first time I'd ever been to New Orleans. Honestly, I'm not a New Orleans fan, by the way, at all.
Really?
But yeah, no, I'm not a New Orleans fan, but. It was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to see that. What I loved is still the story of the first time LSU and Alabama played basketball that year, and it was at Tuscaloosa. And since LSU like never crossed midfield in the football game, the first time they're dribbling the ball across half court, the Alabama fans give them a standing ovation. It's so SEC. It's amazing.
Right. I'm not familiar with ESPN 3D, but I did have the phone. Did you have the phone?
I did have the phone.
I got that too.
Yeah, that was also short-lived. It was a flip, right? It was a flip.
Yeah.
And
I just remember I was annoying everyone around me at the draft, especially, because my phone would go off when a pick, like, here's the pick.
Yeah.
I mean, it was pretty neat if you were a diehard sports fan, but people around you hated it.
No, they don't care. Yeah, it's like, oh, it just came in. Sixers up on the Knicks by 12 after 3. Shut up, dude. Who cares, man? But it's on my phone. Isn't that cool? They alerted me.
Hey, I'm wondering, people are kind of well aware, but I'm just kind of curious your thoughts. Oh, being an Oklahoma guy, Josh Heupel, how revered is he? Because I know it didn't end well, and now, now he's like a rival, and you know, because I feel like Tennessee-Oklahoma is, that's a nice little developing rivalry.
I think people, I think Oklahoma fans will always appreciate Josh. I know that they wish that there wasn't kind of this animosity that is certainly perceived to come from him. You know, I know Bob Stoops and have gotten to know him, and I know there's none from Bob, you know, but it certainly does feel like there's some from Josh, and I think that's what people believe, and I think it may be accurate.
Right.
Feelings were hurt, right, when Bob fired him, and, you know, it's great to see Josh on his feet. He'll always be revered as a great Sooner, even for a couple of years, leading him to that national championship, and then certainly as long as that one's the last one they've won, 25 years, 26 years ago now, yeah, he's well revered there. I do think that years of kind of this tension in the relationship certainly probably bothers some diehards, because, you know, I think all the OU folks, we want to love him and they want him to love them. And I think that to some degree he does. But I wish that was a better relationship between him and Bob. I wish it had ended better, and someday, you know, someday maybe he can have a nice, warm reception. You know, I thought it was cool when Tennessee went a couple of years ago, and certainly, but, you know, you got a national championship quarterback, and I think it just kind of feels like there's a split. But I know that Oklahoma fans always appreciate what he was able to do there.
Yeah, and I mean, until Oklahoma wins another one, he's the last one to do
it. Yeah, that's right. I mean, and, you know, not that Jamel Holloway is not always going to be revered, or, you know, other quarterbacks that have won national championships there and great players that have won them, but none of them have kind of had that breakup like Josh has. So it's one of those things. I don't know. 10 years down the road, does it get better? Do he and Bob come out and do some cool thing on the field before, you know, 5 years from now, Tennessee-OU game? Maybe. That'd be awesome. I think that's what everybody wants to see.
Yeah. Well, and just knowing Tennessee like I know him, I kind of like that he's been through that. Not, I wouldn't call it a failure. I'm sure he wouldn't call it a failure, but just a disappointment to where he probably was on the path to be the Oklahoma head coach one day.
That, certainly.
Right?
Certainly could have been, yeah.
And then he got, you know, he got dismissed, whatever, and he had to kind of reinvent himself. But because I don't know how well you know Knoxville media, but it's brutal.
Mm-hmm.
Like SEC version of like New York or something.
Well.
Everything is scrutinized there.
Yeah.
He's always good. And even now, I mean, he's the best coach they've had in a decade plus. And even now, it's like, is this guy any good? Yeah. Like it's like that's life on Rocky
Top. Can he do enough?
Yeah.
Right? Can he do enough? We're getting it with Kim Caldwell now. I mean, my goodness, right? Women's basketball. But yeah, I would expect that to be the case for football. And I still don't know that how many people are well aware of that fracture there. You know, even, you know, when Brent Venables was on a hot seat and he's totally fine now, but, you know, there'd be people saying, could we get Josh? And I'm just like, I just don't think that's ever going to happen. I don't see that ever being a thing. You know, someday I don't know. I honestly right now I don't see it being a thing, but I certainly root for him and I hope that they get it. You know, I hope he gets back to the playoff and advances in it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was cool. I was in Columbus a couple of years ago. Did you go up there for Tennessee Ohio State for the playoff game?
No, thankfully I didn't.
Well, yeah, it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool to go cover, and it was cool literally. It was about 20 degrees and we're up there in, you know, 8 layers of clothes trying to stay warm, but you know, Josh was always, he's always been great with us. And at Media Days last year, he sat on our set and gave us a great 13-minute interview where we really got to see a lot of personality. I mean, he knows Dusty Dvorak really well, and Dusty was on that set with us. And so we really made him comfortable, and he was really funny. And I remember Josh got off the set, and I think I said on the air, I'm like, I didn't know Josh had that side to him. Like, I never knew. We don't see it. We don't see Josh just, he just seems very serious and, you know, and at times almost even towards a little teetering on grumpy. Like, he just does not show that personality. But Dusty's like, dude, he's one of the funniest guys I've ever known. And I'm like, oh, would have never known. Would have never known. So I'm glad we got to kind of see that from him.
Yeah.
But he was great with us when we were up in Columbus and kind of gave us good availability up there. And you know, we wish that game had gone differently as well, but certainly root for him.
What about, I sense, not animosity by any means, but a nice little rivalry brewing between Bama and Oklahoma.
Feels that way, doesn't it? They played three times in, you know, a year plus, and
like, I don't think the SEC could have planned it. Not that you can plan these things, but it have gone any better, you know, because we're talking two of the arguably top five programms of all time.
Yeah.
And now I almost wish they were playing annually, which I know they'll play all the time, but.
Yeah, I kind of do too. It's something that certainly exists now. It feels like it. You know, Bob and Bob Stoops and trying to remember who their coach, Alabama's coach was in like, what, 02, 03 or 03 and 04. They was a home and home then. And then, of course, you had the Sugar Bowl where Oklahoma beat Alabama. Trevor Knight had the breakout game. And Alabama said, well, you know, somebody used the term consolation game, right?
We didn't want to be there. That was one of those.
That was one of those. That's exactly. That was like the first of the opt-out bowls. But so you had that. And then, yeah, it just kind of felt, like, even when they're playing now, like, things like those games come up. Funny story, man. I was in, when Alabama was playing Oklahoma in the Orange Bowl for a college football playoff, in a semifinal. LSU was 19. It was 18. Because Georgia, OU was 17. Bama, OU was 18. LSU, OU was 19. They all went the other way. But we're down there. My uncle, who passed away last year, but a huge part of my sports fandom and my Sooner fandom. He was an OU grad, lived out in LA, and he and a buddy of his, another OU guy out in LA, came and they met me in Miami. So I was covering it for SEC Network, and we went to Joe's Stone Crab.
Okay, yeah,
legendary place down there in Miami. It was about a two and a half hour wait. Like the game itself, the place was like 99% Alabama fans. Right, there's a few people in OU crimson, and The wait was enormous, and the hostess would continue to say, blankety blank, table for two, you know, you may now be seated. I'll never forget it, man. We're sitting there at the bar, and we hear, Trevor Knight, table for two, you know, please come to the hostess stand. And that bar started booing because it was all Alabama fans.
Yeah.
And they start booing. And I didn't even look to see if it was the Trevor Knight. It was too many people. I couldn't see if it was Trevor. But they heard, and I think it probably was because he maybe was there for that championship or semifinal game. But, yeah, it's always kind of felt like there's something there. And then now, you know, to spoil their playoff chances two seasons ago, to beat them and give Oklahoma a chance in the playoff last year, and then Bama to knock them out of the playoff in Norman after trailing 17-0. It was a painful game. Yeah, it feels like there might be something brewing.
I think so. And so I obviously got to ask you, when we talk rivalry, should Oklahoma be playing Oklahoma State? Should we get Bedlam?
Bedlam? You know, it's one of these things, man. Doing daily radio now at a station in Oklahoma. What I have kind of picked up is that I don't think OU fans miss it. There are some OSU fans that will even tell you OU needs it more than them, which seems silly. I've talked to a lot of people at OU about it. Oklahoma State has a lot of non-conference slots that have already been scheduled out. They've got Alabama coming up. They've got Oregon. They've got other non-conference matchups that I'm told they don't want to get rid of to make room for OU. I think if it ever happens, it's going to be maybe it could be another 10 years. And we could be in the mid-30s or late-30s before spots really open up for both to make that happen. I don't know that it would ever be an annual thing. I love Bedlam, to be honest, but, you know, playing these programs in the SEC every year, I don't know that it's necessary to bring it back. I like that men's basketball does it, women's basketball does it, baseball does it, softball does it, you know, but I don't know. I don't know that it has a place in football anymore, which in some ways is a shame. Growing up in that state, you know, right. I remember going to many Bedlams in Norman and in Stillwater, and it was always great. And, so I miss it a little bit, but I just don't think there's this huge pull to try to get it back.
Yeah, it's interesting because I ask a lot of Oklahoma fans that, and that's pretty much the consensus.
Yeah, yeah, it's not. If it comes back, okay. If it doesn't, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't think they need it. I don't think they need it. I think OU fans really like having, you know, you've won 9-game conference schedule now, you know, but you throw the Nebraska back on it every now and then and the Ohio State and kind of continue to play different, you know, Power Four programs. There's, you don't have to play OSU. You don't have to play them. Because you wouldn't want that to be your Power Four typically. I don't think that would excite people. I always and Joe Castiglione did it. I'm sure Roger Denny, the new AD, will do it. And he, you know, will play anybody. And Oklahoma's one of probably 8 or 10 programs that has always had that mindset. And I hope that continues. And I like getting to see the Michigans of the world on Oklahoma's schedule.
Mm-hmm. And it, I mean, as long as you got Red River, I mean, you got a rival there. So I got to ask you, what any favorite memories or standout things? Because I mean, I always heard about the rivalry. I haven't been able to experience a game yet. That's on my bucket list now. But just even on our program, like these fans, Texas and Oklahoma, 365 going at it.
Yeah.
Which is, I think it's great for the SEC, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I'll always look at 62-13 in 2000, the national championship year. Quentin Griffin, 6 touchdown runs. 2003, they beat Texas 65-13. I think it was 63-14 and then 65-13, two biggest beatdowns in the history of that rivalry. But my favorite one was the first one I ever went to. My buddy John and I at OU, we're in college. We go down there, 1996. Oklahoma is 0-4. John Blake was the head coach. It was a night. My 4 years in college, it was the worst 4-year stretch in school history. 18-27-1. That was the combined record. 0-4 going into the 96 game. Texas is 3-1. They're ranked 25th. And we're a 21-22-point underdog. And all of a sudden, and Oklahoma had lost 7 in a row going into that game, spanning 2 seasons. OU's down 11, 6.5 to go in the fourth quarter. They get a Jarrell Jackson punt return touchdown. Go for 2. Justin Fuentes, the quarterback, completes a pass on a 2-point conversion. They're down 3. They hold Texas, get the ball back, go down, kick like a 47-yard field goal. Game is tied, goes to overtime. And in overtime, Texas got a field goal. OU had a big play down the left sideline. And then James Allen, who 2 years before had gotten stuffed by a guy by the name of Stoney Clark at the goal line for a Texas win, plunges in. OU wins it. I think it was 30-27. And Oklahoma was 1-4 at that time with that victory, 1-4. And you would have thought that they won the national title. Our entire half of the stadium, 45 minutes later, is still celebrating.
Wow.
And I remember on the way out, multiple Texas fans, they held up their hands and gave us high fives and said, thank you, you might have just gotten John McAvich fired for us. But it was, that I'll never forget that day. I will never forget that 1996 game, man. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, wow. That's pretty cool.
First win for John Blake, by the way, at OU, too.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, Schnellenberger's 95 squad lost their last three. Blake comes in 96, starts 0-4, and gets his first win against Texas.
Wow.
Crazy, man.
It was, again, I remember with your radio show, you're talking with Oklahoma people.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this is difficult to, but I have a sense that you can answer this question accurately. If you had to answer for all of Oklahoma, would you rather lose to Texas but win the SEC championship, or beat Texas and lose in the SEC championship game?
Probably. I don't know if I can answer for all of them. I think it's split.
Wait, really?
I think I'd rather lose to Texas and win the SEC championship.
It would be cool to win your first SEC championship.
Yeah. You know, there's been years, you know, there have been years where lose to Texas and then beat them in the Big 12 championship once the divisions went away.
Right.
You know? I think Oklahoma fans want, I don't think it's so much a conference title. They won 50 of those.
Right.
Right. Owned the Big 12. I think it's time for a national title. And that's what they think. If they lose to Texas and win the national championship, I think that's okay with them. That'd be fine with me. Yeah. So I'd like to think that, most of the people would think that way. Because in the end, you do have the last laugh.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be Ohio State. You know, I don't want to be how you win the national title, but all people can think about is how you lost to Michigan again. I don't need that. I think it's been 26 years, man. Like, it's that SEC title, if it leads to a chance in a national championship, that's fine. Texas can beat us in October. That doesn't bother me that much.
I'm so glad you said that, Dari, because my last football question I wanted to ask you, try to take bias out.
Yeah, sure. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Who wins a national championship in football first, Oklahoma or Texas, do you think?
Because
I think you could make an argument for either one, truly.
Mm-hmm. I think you could, too. I think you could, too.
Even this year.
Boy, that's tough. That is really, really good. I don't know if I can completely remove bias on this. I think it's a toss-up. I do. Honest to God, I think it's a toss-up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Texas has fallen on their face too many times of late. I think Oklahoma's building in the right direction. There's a real thing, man, in that place with culture and this incredible feeling of camaraderie. I think they've made all the moves and adjustments offensively to give themselves a chance. Defensively, they're going to be really, really good. I think there's a little bit more stability within the coaching staff and the front office at Oklahoma than there is Texas. We're not hearing all this about is Venable's going to go to the NFL, but we hear this about Sark.
Right.
I think the situation might be set up a little bit more for Oklahoma to be the next one to do it, but I wouldn't be surprised if Texas did it first either.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I apologize. I just thought of one more.
Fine. Yeah.
Jim Nagy, because all Oklahoma fans are
incredible.
I think when that hire was made, I think it was universally praised.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's safe to say he's probably exceeded expectations
at this point. Without a doubt. I've known Jim forever. He used to do some NFL drafts with me on ESPN Radio and got to know him through the Senior Bowl even better. I'm a huge fan of his. He's a friend. When he was hired, I never even thought. It never occurred to me. I think there are programs around the country that saw that news and said to themselves, damn, why didn't we think of that? Like, it's an out-of-the-box thought, but it makes all the sense in the world. No, what he's done, and it works there, because they said, come do it your way. They said, come do it your way. And he said, okay, I'm going to build a staff. You're going to have to let me hire who I want, who I trust. I need you to let me be in charge of acquisition of talent here. Yes, I'll work with Brent Venables, the offense coordinator. I'll work with them on, you know, what are you looking for? Let me find them. Let me rate them. I don't want a star system. He's got a color-coded system of deciding of who works. I want guys that fit the culture. I want guys that look like we want. He talks about, I want guys on defense that are fast and violent. That's what he talks about. Brent Venables has said, here's my blueprint. Go, let's go. You go, you know, here's the canvas. Paint it for me, right? And OU said all along, do it your way. He put together an NFL-style front office. He's gotten to do it his way. He's got complete freedom with a little bit of assistance from the coaching staff. It's allowed Brent to coach. It's allowed Brent to call defense, which he does better than, I would say, as well as anybody, if not better than anybody in the country. Smashing success. You know, he has one failure, and it's Jaden Ott. He has one failure. That's going to happen. You're going to, from an athletic standpoint, you know, as we tape this now, Jaden Ott's over there at senior day, I mean at pro day, impressing the hell out of NFL scouts right now, putting up massive numbers. Didn't do anything for Oklahoma. And that was the one swing and miss by Jim Nagy. Everything else has been a hit. And I can't wait to see this fall. That's one of the things. Does Parker Livingston, does Trell Harris, Omarion Harris, the right tackle that came from Arkansas, Cole Sullivan, the linebacker from Michigan, like how much impact are these guys going to have? I think it's going to be huge. I think it's going to be an offense that is going to be dangerous. And if you combine that with that defense, then they've got something. But yeah, Jim Nagy's been a smashing success there.
Mm-hmm. All right, and last thing for you, Dar. I really appreciate your time. If you don't feel comfortable, I can edit this out and not talk about it at all. But I was curious if you would be willing to share about your son Hayden and Hayden's hope and share that with the audience.
Sure. Yeah. No, I can certainly do that. Yeah. In 2011, my wife and I, actually just after we moved to Charlotte, she was pregnant when we moved. We had a baby boy named Hayden on August 12th of 2001. And we took him home from the hospital and he was fine. He was healthy. And after being home for 3 days, he developed a fever. We took him back to the hospital and basically they said, you know, we're just going to keep him here until he breaks the fever. He's a newborn, 6 days old. And he ended up not breaking that fever. And so they ended up having to admit him. And he had gotten a virus that ended up impacting the left side of his heart. So viral myocarditis is what it was called. Eventually, the left side of his heart wouldn't function correctly, so he had to go on what's called ECMO, which is basically a large machine that handles all the pumping of his blood for him, so he doesn't have to, with the idea that his left side of his heart can kind of start to rebuild. And as he was doing that, they then transitioned him to something. This is a lot more information than you're asking for, but called a Berlin heart, which nobody had, the hospital hadn't used in years and needed like FDA approval to even be able to use it, which was basically just a smaller device that did the pumping of the heart for him. But as can happen in these situations, he ended up with a blood clot, which ended up causing a stroke, which meant they were going to take him off of the heart transplant list that they had put him on. And so we ended up losing him at 39 days. And so what we ended up doing was working with the Children's Organ Transplant Association and setting up what we call Hayden's Hope, which since 2011 has raised money to help with families of kids awaiting an organ transplant, a life-saving organ transplant. So we can pay for things like, well, a lot of, you know, we were at the hospital for 39 days, right? So thank God ESPN was great with me and didn't make me work and I wasn't losing money. But that's not the case with everybody, right? And helps pay your bills. It helps pay your travel costs, your motel or hotel costs while you're staying with your kid. We help try to offset some of the worries of the financial world so that they can focus on what they need to focus on, and that is being there with their child. And so that's kind of what we do. And we've done that since 2011. So Hayden's Hope. Now, I'm saying this right now, and we're kind of in a transition with kind of who's running it, so I've got to get a new website set up and all that, and as soon as we have that information, I'll give that to you. But
that'd be great.
Haydenshope.org, it kind of went away, but the organization is still there, so we're working some things out right now to kind of get it back up on its feet where it was.
Yeah, because I guarantee you our audience would love to help any way they can.
Thank you. So that's awesome. I appreciate you asking about it.
Put the information in the show notes for sure, but Yeah, so hey, that's all I have for you, Dart. Really appreciate this. This was awesome. And
Enjoyed it.
I hope you have a great rest of your trip in Nashville. And again, I mean, just it sounds like you already do, but pinch yourself that you get to do. I mean, all these people that are watching you, you were living our dream, getting to go for SEC Network and cover all these games. And man, that's awesome.
I appreciate it, Mike. Thank you for having me, man. I like what you guys do too. Tell Shane I said, what's up, would you?